This is conscious living. This is why I do my tap dance and the music kind of slowly fades. Hope you're having a good day. We were derailed last week because of a big power outage in Detroit. And, you know, whenever you're listening to this, just know that it gave me an opportunity at that time to kind of talk with Annie separately. And it's always nice to make a connection with the guest ahead of time. I don't have a chance to do that every single time. But when it's a topic like this, it gives me a better perspective and maybe a way to ask better questions too, because this is such a powerful message and there's such a tremendous response to it. I'm so glad that we had the derailing last week. So I had more time with Annie Kagan. She's the author of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. If you've seen it, if you checked out anything about it, you might have become really attached or enthusiastic about the presentation, and you are not alone. Annie, thank you so much for coming out of your shy personality to say, hey, my brother is really, really here. And even though he's dead, we're connected. I love it.
Thank you, Wendy. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Okay, so just to give everybody an idea, this was just not the way you intended to go public about anything, especially if you were writing a book, correct?
Absolutely. The whole book was something that pretty much happened to me. It wasn't something that I set out to do. What I set out to do was I had been a chiropractor in New York City. I began feeling really overwhelmed because I think people don't really understand the responsibilities and the everyday stresses, really, of being a doctor. And I learned to meditate to strengthen myself, but actually what happened was there was a strange side effect, which was I became really, really sensitive, so sensitive that all I wanted to do was be alone, and I sold my practice, packed up my life, and moved to a very small, secluded house on Long Island, and ready to enjoy my solitude when my bad boy brother showed up.
And a house guest.
Right, he didn't live with me, uh-huh. but he showed up. Actually, he had been missing, and he showed up, and we had to go rescue him. And then he struggled for several years with his drug problem, and then he died. And then 3 weeks later, the story really began when he woke me at dawn and reassured me he was fine and described floating through a glorious universe, being attended to by loving higher beings. And in his bad boy way, he assured me that death really couldn't be better, that it was very enjoyable. And
I wish you were here.
and we would meet again, and we have met again many, many, many times.
Okay, and just to give people an idea, when you call him your bad boy brother and what the Billy Fingers reference to, because that wasn't your favorite name for him.
No, I hated that name. I call Billy my bad boy brother. He was my older brother, and although he had a problem, really, since I was a little girl with mainly drugs and then alcohol, to me, he was kind of a glamorous figure, kind of like James Dean, because he was very free, it seemed to me. He lived life on his own terms, and he had fun. He loved people. I was always much more withdrawn, the good girl who, you know, got the good grades, and so he was really my bad boy brother. And he later in his life, he took the name Billy Fingers because when he was very young, he quit high school and he worked in a factory and he cut off a little piece of one of his fingers. And so later on, he took that name. And I guess I was kind of forced into using that name for the book.
Okay, well, my question, too, in terms of his life, he was successful in his own way. I mean, this wasn't a guy who was totally off the deep end and completely incapacitated by life. He was active.
He was very active. He actually, I guess when he was a teenager, he got busted for drugs, and he went to Synanon, which was really the very first drug treatment center, and then he ran drug treatment centers for young teenagers. He worked in the court system getting people, instead of having them go to jail, he got them sentenced to go to drug centers. He loved life. He was very active, very loving, actually very, very special person. It was only at the end when really his addictions became so strong that I would say he suffered quite a bit.
Well, at that point, he was involved in some really shady stuff.
He was. He was involved with sports betting offshore. He was involved in half the times I didn't want to know what. But at the very end, even though he really tried, and he did, Wendy, he really, really tried everything to beat his addictions, and I also tried to help him, it just was a losing battle.
How old was he when he died?
He was 62.
Okay. This is a guy who had a full life, and basically he saw both sides, I mean, in terms of complete, what we would consider a way of seeing a success with that, helping the kids and the people who were caught up in that system see a way out, or maybe find a way that they didn't have to complete the role and go directly to prison, which later he did.
Yes, he spent time in prison. He spent time also on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, living a really great life. You know, he was kind of a prince and a beggar. And in a way, I think that that's what makes what he says from the other side extremely interesting. Because he's not what you call, you know, just a citizen who had a regular life and a regular family and did everything right. And so his viewpoint on things lets us all identify with him a little bit, the shadow part of ourselves or the part of ourselves that has our struggles. It's a very different philosophy.
Well, I love it in the way that it gives you the entire spectrum. And a lot of people who are telling their stories now and are still living are saying, you know, I had to go to the absolute depths of despair or rejection or loss or pain before I could come through that. And it isn't always a winning battle. And that's what they're showing here, that even if there wasn't a winning outcome in this dimension, in this plane where other people could see it, it was all part of his journey. And I love his cheerleading that he gives to you when he shares, you know, the messages of what he has told you. What gave you, I guess, the most, I don't know if I would say peace, but maybe with your own life, the own satisfaction, or I guess there's another word, serenity is probably a good one.
Yes. I've learned so many things from Billy. Even though I had always been the younger sister, I had always kind of been his guardian, and now he's my guardian. And I learned so many things from him, and I think one of the most important things is, you know, I'm always waiting for life to be perfect before I can enjoy myself. Like the perfect summer afternoon with the perfect breeze and the perfect temperature. And if something's not right, I would be focused on that. But there's one part in the book where he says, you know, princess, because he calls me princess. He didn't say that in a sweet way when he was alive, but now he means it. He means it in a very lovely way. He's like, you know, where he is, there's only light. There's no shadow. But on Earth, it's only noon for a certain amount of time, so there is a shadow on our planet. And, you know, you can't have the wonderful wind if you don't have tornadoes. You can't have the sea if you don't have storms. So I've come to really accept the more difficult things in life and still really enjoy myself anyway. And that, I think, is for me, the greatest gift is like, you know, in a way, it's like suffer as little as you can and party as much as you can. Enjoy yourself.
Now, that's a path that you had to reach as you were making this connection, because this was a bit frightening and intimidating, thinking that you were possibly imagining it, and then discovering when he gave you the accurate information, oh my gosh.
Yes, Wendy. At first, you see, you have to understand when he, you know, people say to me, oh, when he spoke to you, wasn't it scary? It was never scary when he spoke to me, because the beautiful atmosphere of the next world came with his voice. So it was always very serene and comforting. But then after his visit, I would say, this is really crazy. I cannot be talking to my dead brother in another dimension. There must be something wrong with me. And then he gave me proof. But more than anything, the thing I have to say that terrified me was that, you know, Billy says things in the book that I don't think have been said anywhere. And I just felt like, okay, it's fine that he's telling me these things, but I don't really want to be the messenger of these things, because really, if we were supposed to know all these details about what happens after we die, wouldn't we know it already? So I felt like I was kind of playing with some kind of a cosmic taboo, and I really was scared.
Well, and scared really of the backlash that might come from you sharing this.
Yes, and not only what people would think, like, oh, they would think I was making it up, because the truth is, you know, I don't care that much, because if anybody really read the book carefully and did the Googling and the little clues that Billy said, they would know, like, this couldn't be a made-up story. It's too beyond to really be made up. But I think that I felt like, well, he's a bad boy. So why should I be doing what he's telling me? It wasn't like, you know, he knew how to live life and not get in trouble. He was always getting in trouble. And now, like, is he going to get me in trouble?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good question.
It was, and it was on my mind for a very long time. And actually, at the beginning, I only told about 5 people. And then one day I took a trip. Actually, it was a Billy-inspired trip up into upstate New York. And I hadn't told any stranger. And I was at this place, and I was having a massage. And Billy had been a massage therapist for a while. And while I was getting the massage, I don't know, I really relaxed. I don't know why I did it, but I figured, oh, I'm never going to see the guy who was massaging me again. And he was so nice. And I started to tell him about Billy and that I was communicating with my dead brother. And he told me, you know, don't worry about him. And then when the massage was over, when I got up, I saw that he was crying. And he must have been about 27. And he told me that his young sister had just died, and she had only been about 18, and she got sick very suddenly and died, and that he felt that she had sent me to him to let him know that she was okay. And that was like the first of many incidents like that, where, and then I felt that I really didn't have a right to keep the story to myself, even though I very much wanted to.
Well, and the power in that of seeing the release, the gratitude, and just the transformation from somebody who is in incredible, incredible state of grief is, I think, what is driving a lot of the people who are coming to you. And your the result on the Facebook, I'm just looking at it right now, almost 50,000, you know, and that happened so quickly. People going, oh my gosh, word of mouth, saying, this is real. This is legit. She's got something. I feel it. I connect. And I think you're getting rewarded now by seeing that if it isn't a complete 100% result of everybody believing it, the people who need it know, and they're the ones it's for.
They have been finding it, and I'll tell you the truth, Wendy, like Billy told me really early on never to try to convince anybody, just to tell the truth and to tell the story, and that's a really big relief for me. Because I'm really not trying to convince anybody. And the most thrilling thing for me, the really thrilling thing for me, is that, of course, when Billy was talking to me and I was putting the book together and writing the book, I was having spiritual experiences during that time. And now, I mean, it's like there are two kinds of people being drawn to the book. One are people who are grieving, and also people are just having spiritual experiences as they kind of go through these amazing realms with Billy that he describes and gives this philosophy about how to have a better life and, you know, what it's like there. And people tell me, like, they read the book and it changes their life because it says things that they've felt inside. I got an amazing email yesterday, I love this, from a woman whose mother just died. And she told me, I know this is going to sound strange, but she told me that while she was reading Billy's words, she felt her mother communicating with her somehow through the mm-hmm. book, telepathically. Yeah. And when she finished the book, she had been looking for her mother's AA coins, and she knew where to find them.
Yes. So yes.
That's, and you know,
That part is where you also connect. I want to bring that into it because that's where the synchronicities started happening with your friends and people around you, and as how you were able to find his car. That's huge.
That was huge. And actually, you know, the subtitle is How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. So you have to understand that unless Billy gave me proof, I never would have published the book. So I guess it was on his second visit, Billy knew that I was thinking, well, I'm crazy. I must be crazy. So he promised that he would give me proof that he was real. And of course, at that time, he didn't tell me how he would do it. So I had no idea what he was talking about. But what it turned out was that he gave me what's called many, many evidentiary after-death communications, which means he gives me information that I didn't know, which turned out to be true. So, Wendy, like you said, like one of the first ones was I was in my kitchen, and he said to me, I want you to go find my car. I want you to get the stuff from my car. Now, I had been living in New York. He was in Florida. We were not in communication towards the end of his life. He was homeless. And I didn't even know he had a car. And I said to him, oh, Billy, what do you want me to do? Go call every junkyard and you know, call every place in Florida? How am I supposed to find your car? And he told me to look in his wallet, which I now had in my possession. And as I'm looking through the cards, I come to a card from a Mercedes dealer. And he goes, bingo. And I call the number on the card, and he tells me he's Billy's friend, and he did have Billy's car. Billy had crashed his car in the last couple of weeks of his life. And I asked him to please, I wanted the stuff from the car. And, of course, when I hung up, I almost fainted because how did I find Billy's car? He had to be really speaking to me. And that was just the first of so many incidents, and actually without spoiling the story, because the book is kind of a spiritual thriller, because I wanted the reader to go through and experience the mystery that I was experiencing. But the things in the car were very significant, very significant.
Okay. Now, without spoiling the story again, he lays out this pathway of what he experiences, because he checks in with you and says, okay, this is what's happening now. And then he comes back and now this is happening. And it's a really wonderful transition. This is a little spiral as he continues to go up and become lighter and I guess more expansive. And at points he fades out and then comes back. So can you give a little bit of a hint of how that transpires?
Absolutely. What was very surprising to me was the nature of the afterlife and how it is not a static place. It's really vast and complex, and we transform there. So in a way, death is an evolutionary journey where we become a higher being. So he goes through many realms, and along the way, he meets higher beings. And one of the ways that he transforms is that he receives unconditional love from the higher beings. And that kind of love actually makes him love himself more. So he says that, you know, even the soul changes because he loves himself so much more than when he first came to the afterlife. And he meets a guide, and he's introduced to his something that he calls a soul tribe, which is such a wonderful concept, because it's like we have our family here, but we also have a tribe that we belong to. And not everybody is feels really at home in their family. Some of us do, but some of us don't. But we all have a soul tribe that is waiting for us there, that we could connect to while we're still here. And it also makes room for all the different faiths and different paths to the divine. There isn't just one way.
One of the things that I get from my own experiences is that each and every one of us has a unique connection. And sometimes we get caught up by trying to compare, or somebody else has a real, you know, a more mesmerizing or fantastic story. And so theirs must be better. But it's just to trust your own process and the ways that work for you, because that's where all of the learning is. And that's where the connections are. And like with you and your brother, it's an extraordinary story because it tells little bits and pieces of how you make your connections and have to get out of your comfort zone. That's a huge deal.
I definitely had to get out of my comfort zone. But that's also, Wendy, one of the really great things that Billy taught me was, you know, that in life we compare ourselves to other people a lot. But the truth is, the real truth is, you never really can stand in someone else's shoes, because you don't know what they came here for. You don't really know what it's like to be in their life. So in a way, the comparison game is a lie. It's just not true. And he really has helped me. You know, it's funny because he goes to a very high place in the afterlife. And I'm thinking, well, why? Because Billy didn't really, according to our way of thinking, he didn't really accomplish what we see as, you know, a very high spiritual state, although he was a very spiritual person. And he says one of the things that he did do, though, was Billy definitely saw through his own eyes, not through the eyes of others. And that's another thing he says, please believe what you see. Don't believe what somebody else sees. And never, never let somebody else define who you are. That's a big one.
Well, and for him, I think when you're talking about he didn't achieve, it's like there's this unspoken rule that you have to go in life up certain steps. And the harder it is, the more you're going to accomplish, and you have to do everything right, or you'll fail. You'll be a failure here. And he's showing that failure isn't necessarily something that we can understand at this particular level. when we go through and meet our challenges head on, whatever the outcome, it isn't necessary for us to say, I failed here. It's what you go on to beyond where you are from here. And you go back, oh, that's what I learned. It wasn't easy. And yeah, it looked to everybody else like I failed, but man, now I get it. Does that make sense?
There you go. That is so beautiful. Thank you for saying that. You know, like he says, sometimes it's just the struggle itself that's the important thing. It's not always about winning or losing. Like after he died and I called one of his drug counselors, he said to me, oh, well, you know, Billy didn't make it because Billy just didn't trust his higher power. I mean, there was nothing further from the truth. He, you know, one of the things that I found in that car that he wanted me to find were these wonderful journals that he wrote at the very end of his life when he was so-called failing. And boy, he was so close to God. That's all he really cared about. So, you know, one of the very kind things in his message is, you know, don't be so quick to judge other people and their failings. And also don't be so quick to judge yourself. You know, when I'm going through something really hard and I go through plenty of hard things, you know, people sometimes think, oh, I have Billy, so therefore my life must be really easy. Not at all. And you know, when I'm going through something particularly hard, he'll say to me, okay, so today you're not learning mathematics, you're learning really difficult calculus. And, you know, our challenges are just sometimes enough in themselves. Like he said, when he does his life review, that he can see that one of the things he came to Earth to explore was his drug addiction.
Let's take a break. Okay. Cause that, I think that's a good place to pick up later on when we come back. But you're touching on something that he knew when he went back. He knew there were some things that he had to work on and he got to find those out. And that might be helpful for other people who are here and working to know there is a point to all of this. So, okay. It's Annie Kagan, our author here. Afterlife of Billy Fingers, a true story about her bad boy brother and how he helped her become a bit more enlightened, and us too. We'll be back on Conscious Living.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home. I'm home. And I love it. I'm home. I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home where I belong.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Annie Kagan is my guest. The book is called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. True story. True story. And I love that. My own experience with this non-physical spirituality encounters with other beings, other dimensions. The way I've had proof is the nightlight and this energy that interacts with me and creates that engagement 24/7. It's been doing it since 1997. It was my way of just figuring out that there was more here than what we see on the physical plane. And talking about that, I understand the thing that Annie went through and is going through in terms of coming out and saying, this is unconventional, but it's my reality. I've got a dog hiding in the bathroom right now because she does not get the stuff that's happening as we go through this, because I experience this non-physical stuff. It's my reality. My dog is one of my corroborators. She lets me know, yes, they're here. Make them go away. I'll hide in the bathroom until they're gone. So then like this morning, I got this, it's wonderful because you know, this is your brother. You have this connect. For people like me, all of a sudden something will come into my mind. Like this morning, it's been this song. I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah, it's all this song keeps going in over. And so it's giving me a hint that somebody is around me who needs some information. And that's how I work with it. It's like playing a game of charades. Was it like that at the beginning with you and trying to put things together for yourself and say, how am I going to make this make sense with what Billy's giving me? And then our conservative conventional viewpoint of the afterlife? Was that a puzzle for you to work through?
I would say that even though, and this is something Billy explained, like, even though you may say in your mind, oh yes, I know that we live on, I know that we're divine eternal beings, because actually that's really the meaning of this story, because if Billy's eternal, we're all eternal, and we're eternal now. And he taught me that even though we know this with our minds, it's very different when we have the experience of it. And every time a proof would happen, you know, where he would give me, like what you're saying, he'd give me a little clue, you know, like one of the first ones, he told me to call my friend Tex and say, show me the money. So I call my friend Tex. I say, oh, I know this sounds crazy, but Billy says, show me the money. What does that mean? And she said, oh my God, I went to the beach this morning and I looked up at the sky and I said, Billy, if you're real, let me know. And then I came home, I took a shower. And after the shower, I was dancing in front of the mirror with a towel saying, show me the money, show me the money, show me the money, thinking about my screenplay. And then I get out of the shower and you call and you say, Billy says, show me the money. So she's laughing like you, and I'm kind of in shock, because every time something like that happened, it was almost like I got a chill from the top of my head to the bottom of my toe, and it erased all the things that I thought I knew about life and death. And it was kind of clearing out my nervous system to make room for not a concept, but an experience. And after a while, with enough of those, I just had to believe. And, you know, I believe, I really believe that we are divine, eternal beings, that we're here for reasons that we can't even understand in our human minds. And to live your life to the fullest, to trust yourself, and death is really a doorway. And to really, you know, open your mind to the fact that there really are other realms, and if there's a soul, and if there's a world beyond this one, what does that mean in terms of your life? Like, ask yourself that question, and it changes your perspective on everything.
When you're talking, we were going into the break, you're talking about what he learned and what he came here to study and to find out about. Was there a list, or did he just give you a few little clues?
Well, at one point he's doing, he does several different life reviews. And the life review is a little different than the life review in the near-death experience. A lot of times people in near-death experiences have emotions about their life. But Billy says he's viewing it from a very detached point of view. And a lot of the things that seemed the most difficult were the most interesting to him now, because that's where he was growing and evolving. And, you know, he talks about Shakespeare, and he says, you know, what are Shakespeare's plays really about? They're about circumstances that change us. And we all, you know, we all resist change, and we all resist struggle. But those are the things that really help us evolve. So he says, you know, contrary to what everybody on earth would think, that his path of drug addiction was the most interesting, profound part of his life when he's looking back at it.
You know what I got is when you said, what are his shakes? What is the plays about? And the word that came, ethos and pathos. And I thought, what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. And so I had to look it up. It's a Greek word meaning character.
Mm, that is so beautiful. Yes.
And and if you expand it, it says he used to describe the guiding beliefs or ideals that characterize a community, nation, or ideology. And I'm thinking, because that isn't an answer, I didn't know it, but that's how we get stuff. You know, when you're in the shower and you get inspiration, I think one of Conchetta Bertoli or Bertoshi, I can't remember her last name. I actually even interviewed her and I still can't remember the last name. But she was, you know, do dead people walk their dogs? Can go see you in the shower. Mm-hmm. Where do you think all that inspiration comes from? when we get these little divine hints and divine clues, and you know that little nudge that comes in there, like this moment that that word that came to me,
yes.
these are the things that we get from that energy and those energies and those beings around us who are constantly, I guess cheerleading would be a good word, helping and assisting. We just can't see them, and I think that's what I love about this book, is it gives people a very concrete transition and the condition of his life versus yours and how you would view him as a bad boy. But he was just working right out in public where everybody could see it. All of his hard knocks were right there in Technicolor.
They were right there. And really, if he hadn't been through all that and the good times, because he had a good life, you know, in New York City and friends and wealth. I mean, he really lived everything. And I don't think he could have written this book from the other side had he not stood in many people's shoes. He says that, you know, his life enabled him to stand in many people's shoes. And I mentioned his journals, and one of the astounding things that I found in his journals, which I'm sure is why he led me to the car, amongst other things, is because he says, oh, I just want to write a book so much to like help people in a spiritual way and to make them laugh. And now he's done it after after he died.
Which I think it's kind of funny. No, they didn't tell him. When you make a goal or something like that, you don't realize there's fine print. It's like they didn't tell him, okay, it's all right. You will. Don't worry. It's going to come. It's going to happen. And we'll be here to help you all the way. And like, oof, wait a yeah. second. Wait a second.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned something else like really important before, because a lot of times people want to have a sign after their loved ones pass on. It's very important. And just like you, Wendy, are believing and surrendering to those impulses, it's very important to be open to kind of your intuitive feelings. So let's say, you know, when Billy died, before he started to talk to me, there was a snowstorm and this red cardinal kept appearing at my window. And that's very unusual, a cardinal in the snow. And I knew it was Billy's messenger. And people tell me all the time, God, you know, every time I see this kind of a butterfly, my doctor told me this the other day, you know, I know it's my father. I can't tell you why, but, you know, and I always see it when I'm having a bad day, and then I feel so much better. So I think the book is also here to encourage people to believe what they feel in their heart is the truth. And the more you open to that, the more you will receive those kind of signs.
To me, I call it learning to read your own code, because everything here is, it doesn't happen by reading somebody else's dictionary or somebody else's guides, because yours are going to be unique to you, and they will have some kind of a history in your life, your past life, the people who are in your community. They all have pieces of your puzzle. And when you learn to read your code, it's amazing the things that start happening, because you allow, like you're saying, you know, allow and permit that there's something else going on here, and you can read that too. It's having a whole different song of life. You know, when you've got the words, you've got the tones, the phrases, all of that are yours. And it's wonderful that you have your brother to give us a kind of a, you know, here's this side and here's the flip side of what happens when you live a life and it doesn't necessarily go the way everybody else thinks it should, but you still get out of jail free and come back to say, hey, look what's on the other side. Ain't this awesome?
Yes. And it's also about, you know, loving yourself and being kind to yourself. Billy always says that, you know, in hard times, our demons could come knocking on the door. And the demons always make you feel like there's something wrong with you, that you shouldn't have this struggle. And, you know, it's not just about addictions. I got this wonderful note from a woman who read the book. She said, this book changed my whole life because I have rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, a lot of the new age theories are like, well, you create all your disease or whatever, you know, whatever's happening to you that's so-called, quote, negative is because somehow you're creating it with your negative thoughts. And she said, thank you, thank you, thank you, because maybe I'm not creating it with my negative thoughts. Maybe this is just my lesson. Maybe this is, you know, my divine struggle. It doesn't mean that I'm bad or I'm wrong or I'm doing something wrong. So I think that the message that if you have difficulties in your life, it doesn't mean that you've done something wrong to deserve it.
I love that. Yeah, I agree. And there's a, but see, that's the thing with the generalities. A lot of people generalize because it's an easy way to compartmentalize and label and say, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm doing it. The thing is, there are reasons that we experience different, whether it's hardships or joy, celebrations or revelations, because there's something about it that's a message or meaningful to us if we're willing to drop all the shoulds of the 9 to 5, I've got to do this, I got to do that, I got to get this, into the, what can I get from this moment? How can I be here now? You talk about the pearl.
Yes, I talk about the pearl. And I just want to say also, I love that Billy's so real, because he said, you know what? And when something hard happens, it doesn't mean you have to say, oh, this is a wonderful gift either.
I know.
It's like, you
just
know,
be
something
real.
Really painful happens. You know, you don't have to say, wow, I'm so happy. He's like, it's very normal to prefer pleasure over pain. And that's okay. That's part of the plan. That's how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to prefer pleasure. So, you know, you don't have to hypnotize yourself into, you know, something that's not natural. And yes, he talks about the pearl and the oyster, because this was so funny. You know, he starts giving me this blessing, like saying, the world is your oyster. The world is your oyster. And then in his own Billy way, and he's, you know, you are the pearl and the oyster. And, you know, usually you think of that as a happy thing. Oh, the world is my oyster. So then right after he says it, I find this magazine advertisement. It was actually for Kohler sinks. And I'm looking into this advertisement and I can't figure out what it is. And it's the picture of a woman on the floor of an oyster bar, slumped with like thousands and thousands of oyster shells around her. And she's exhausted. And in her hand, she's looking at this one beautiful, amazing, sparkling pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he taught me that it's okay for life to have irritations, and don't keep thinking about the irritation. That's the other really good thing, is that you don't always have to focus on the things that irritate you. You can focus on the things that you like, that please you. And sometimes when you do that, the irritation will take care of itself. And I did some research, Wendy, and one thing I found out is that especially women, even biologically, we're conditioned to pay attention to the problem. Because when you're raising a child, you have to be on the lookout for what's wrong. And so divert yourself sometimes and look at the little things. That's the other thing I learned about, you know, the magic that's at the core of our lives that we usually don't tune into. Just the joy of breathing and seeing and walking and seeing the face of someone we love. The very, very simple pleasures mean so much more to me now because I pay attention to them. I don't take them for granted.
Well, and that's the thing. There's this incredible miracle that is life, of the way we see things, the way we do things, the things that make us unique and special in our own right. And there's a doctor who wants to write a book about my companion's mom, because he said, you know, technically you're blind. You, by all the textbook material, you should not be able to see, and yet she's fully functional. And he says, I need to write a book about you and the other people I've run into who are able to do all these things that our science and our figures and our quotations and our computations tell us are impossible. Your book about Billy at one time would have been an impossibility for people to get the concept that you're going to have this incredible engagement with a brother, even though he's dead, who tells you, get a life and enjoy it. Darn it.
Enjoy it. No matter what's going on, it doesn't matter. You know, this isn't in the book, but sometimes he would tell me little fables, and he calls them foxy fables. And one of them is like, Foxy's, you know, walking down the street and this big ocean appears in front of her, and she steps out with her, you know, big fancy Jimmy Choo shoes, and she tries to step into the ocean, but it keeps moving away from her. And when what you seek eludes you, just party in your Jimmy Choo shoes, you know.
You got the Jimmy Choo shoes. What else do you need?
You got your Jimmy Choo shoes. Enjoy yourself where you are.
Oh, well, and that's, I guess that's part of, I guess the drama, the dilemma, the confusion about being here. You're supposed to do something. Always do, be, be. If you're not doing any of that, then you are worthless and you have no value. And yet, honey, until you find how to do and be just right where you are, there's nothing here. Does that make sense?
It does. And also he says, you know, it's not just about what you accomplish on Earth. We're so fixated on what we accomplish on Earth, but it's about much more than that. And you get to make up what it's about. That's the main thing. He really gives the power back to you. He kind of takes the power away from society and belief systems. I was reading something this morning because, you know, on Facebook I do a lot of Billy posts, so I take lines from the book and I pair them with pictures, and people love them. You know, they wait for
I'm sharing them. Yes, we do.
Yeah, they're very inspirational. And the one I read today was, you know, every once in a while, sort through your beliefs and get rid of the ones that don't serve you. Just like that. Just throw them away. You don't need them. You know, don't go running around following things that you've been taught when really they have no value to you.
Or you've outgrown them. You needed them to get from point A to point B and they serve their purpose, but now they don't apply anymore.
They don't apply. And then sometimes he'll say to me, okay, you need a couple of beliefs to function on Earth.
You need a couple.
You know, you can't be, I mean, if you were beliefless, then you'd really be the Buddha already. So
I believe I got to breathe. How's that?
So, but he's like, pick your beliefs wisely. You know, you get to choose them. Don't let other people choose them for you.
Okay. Has he given you any cheat sheets? Like, okay, I'll just tell you this. They don't want me to tell you, but I will tell you that you are here to focus on. And then does it go blank or does he get to, does he get to share?
You know, with me personally, he's not so forthcoming. I mean,
no shortcuts, Annie.
You know, I'll ask him for things and he'll say, well, you know, I can't really interfere. People think, oh, I have Billy and he'll tell me everything, but it really doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just the way it has to be because he wants me to be my own authority. But there was, you know, when he tells me these little stories sometimes, these little fables, he'll say, you know, and don't listen to anyone. And then he'll say, okay, maybe me once in a while.
Yeah, oops.
But,
okay, so
you know,
he still
he says that one of the reasons he got to such a great place was because he saw through his own eyes. And anyone listening, it's like, see through your own eyes, develop your own power and your own authority, because that in itself will give you a good life.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw the stuff on your page this morning and I happened to see somebody said, are you going to do another book? And I saw your answer.
What did I say?
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And yet. So you're working, you got it up there in the old boiler pot going, huh?
Yes, I think what's going to be next, because I used to be a musician and my very good friend and Grammy and award-winning producer is going to write the music, and I think we're going to do like a Becoming the Universe type meditation to really take people on their own journey into the different realms. That is something
How cool.
I'm going to be working on probably in September.
Does it involve railroads or Dinah anywhere?
Probably like railroad rocket ships.
Yes, space railroads. Ooh, yeah. Okay. Now, the deal though is that if you're listening right now, the book is tremendous. And if you, whatever you want, Amazon, Annie, wherever you get it, it has little bits and pieces of puzzles and clues and hints that what we are here is just the tip of the iceberg. And all of our troubles and trials do have a purpose. And it isn't anybody else's business what it is to you. All right. If you want to share, that's great. But nobody can judge you because they don't know your full story. And there's such a relief that you're sharing with that, Annie. It really is tremendous.
Oh, you said it so beautifully. That was beautiful.
I would say,
you know, the book is like a true spiritual thriller. It really is. Like, you can't put it down. People read it in a day, and then they say, oh, I have to read it again. So go to Facebook, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. You'll get a real taste of what the book is like, and you could download a free chapter there as well.
Yay, and that'll be enough to get you going. The first chip, you have to eat the whole bag. Annie Kagan, you're a delight. I love your brother, Billy, and we are looking forward to hearing more from him and you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me, Wendy.
And thank you for listening to Conscious Living, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Check it out. See you later.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?